Hi, I'm Christina.
And I'm Z.
We've worked in insights on both the supplier and brand sides.
And we've worked for software suppliers to the industry.
And we've been friends for a few years now and love geeking out over research topics.
Every couple of weeks, we chat about topics in market research and insights here on MR Explorer.
So Z, are you ready for today's episode?
Sure am. Let's do this.
Hey, Christina, if I were to ask you what sounds like a simple question, I'm curious what your answer would be.
Okay.
Would you say market research is a male-dominated industry?
Ooh, loaded question. I think it depends on the world that you're in, the type of market research world that you're in, because I think there is such a... There's such a variety of different spaces within market research you could be in. I think it also depends on what you do within the market research world. So I think some people are faced with a limitation of where they can go because market research at that point in their career could be male dominated. But I also think that there is a wide variety of opportunity for women in the market research industry.
That's
how's
really
that for a loaded answer for a loaded question?
Perfect. I actually love it because when I posed this question on Twitter a couple of weeks ago, the response that I got was very, very similar. It was a classic, what I think is a classic market research answer. It depends, right?
It depends.
What methodology should I use? It depends what you want.
I mean, it just goes to show you, like, what market research company could we work for when we get older?
It depends. But what I found interesting was, now this was, of course, the highly scientific world of Twitter, right? So I got 47 votes. But of those 47 votes that I got, and what I did was I listed just three options, male-dominated, female-dominated, or equal split for what people thought about the research industry. Mm-hmm. I had 17% say male-dominated, 36% said female-dominated, 46% replied equal split.
Okay.
Right off the bat, there's this perception, the majority perception seems to be equal split.
Mm-hmm.
However, the comments that I got were, ranged from you left an answer out, I don't know, to lower end or more junior roles, it feels like an equal split, but once you get to the more senior roles, it starts to get more male dominated.
Mm-hmm.
What's your reaction to that?
I think they're right. I think there's another missing answer of, are we talking supplier side or are we talking client side? Because I have been in both shoes. We've talked about it before. You and I have both worked supplier side. We've both worked client side. We've been on the tech side. And I think that there tends to be, you know, I think there's a split based on the type of category of market research that you happen to fall into. For example, I guess I would love for us to speak about our own experiences because one, I can only speak to my own experience.
Yeah.
I would hate to put that on anyone else. But when I was on the supplier side, especially starting out, I was very, you know, lower end, not an analyst yet, lower on the very entry level side of market research, working in a client ops, client facing role. And it was, the teams were mainly women. I started out in market research surrounded by other women. I was in a supplier side company and, you know, even outside of sales, I think the sales team was pretty split 50-50, but even higher than that or outside of sales where it was higher up,
mm-hmm.
there were a lot of women involved. I felt, I have never on the supplier side felt in again, in a very privileged way, I've never felt marginalized in those spaces. That being said, most of my clients, when I was either client ops or when I moved into a different supplier role as an analyst and forward, most of my clients were men.
Oh, that is very interesting.
Right? So that is kind of, I think that that creates some kind of dichotomy of, I am here to help you, man, you know? So I never really thought of it in that way until, you know, there were a lot more open discussions on gender equality and women in the workplace. But I, you know, and even I hadn't thought of it until you and I talked about last or a couple weeks ago, opening up this discussion between the two of us here of, you know, even my early supplier side, where I was mainly working with other suppliers as my client. And then I moved into a, end client client, if that makes sense. I was mainly dealing with men as my client, which as an early in career market researcher was maybe a little intimidating, but also I tend to use like my like, for example, my dad, I tend to use higher up male influences as, at least early in my career, use them as like my goal. I will get there. I will get to where he is. I will do what he did. And I want to learn what he did to get to where he is.
Yeah.
Now that the world has shifted a little bit, I do have a lot of, and we've talked about in past podcast episodes, I do have a lot of other female mentors who I can identify with and being in similar parts of our lives and seeing how they have moved forward in their career, how they've handled, you know, outside personal life and work life, and how they have climbed what we would call a, the ladder.
Right, the career ladder.
Career ladder, thank you. So I think it's interesting to look at, you know, I never looked at that clientele being a majority male clientele as anything that was meant to keep me down or bring me down, but I think it's worth taking note of when we have entry level early in career market researchers. Who are they quote unquote serving? Like they're serving the customer, but who are they serving? Mm-hmm. And is it worthwhile taking a look at how that affects them in their career growth and how they learn what the industry looks like and where they want to go? Does that make sense?
It does, because it makes me think of in a lot of industries, when you look at the women, especially in STEM industries, the idea of if you can't see it, you can't be it. Right. And so when you have a lot of women who are in these entry level positions and what they see and who they work with, either on the client side, if they're on supplier side, they're working with men who are decision makers on the client side, or perhaps they report there's a man who is in a senior level in their organization and they don't see very many women in that senior level, that subconsciously makes us think as women, oh, that's not for me. That just subconsciously ends up making you perceive the world in a certain order, whether or not that order is real, but that can be a very real reality. Mm-hmm. I look at how I've come through, and or the companies that I have worked for have primarily been tech-driven companies. I have worked for supplier side, a couple of companies where I would say it was primarily women who were in the roles who were my peers. But then on the tech side, working for a company who is more of a tech supplier to the market research industry, it's interesting to see this difference between your data analysts, your very heavy data people, and developers of the software that is being sold feels and is very male dominated on mm-hmm. the sales side or the customer facing side, the more customer facing side, that seems to be more equal split, at least between male and female. But that's at like, up until you get to the senior level roles. Once you get to those senior level roles, like executive vice president, that's mm-hmm. where that equal split between men and women seems to fall away in every industry, it seems like.
Yeah, agree.
And I don't necessarily know why that is. I just think it's a very interesting thing to observe from the outside. And it's interesting how it can impact us very differently. Like for you, you see those men and you're like, I want to know how he got there. And I want to, that's like a goal, right? I am going to make an effort to get to that place. Other women I can see something like that and they might get intimidated or they fight the system. They feel like they are fighting a system or they legitimately are fighting a system where their merit is consistently being overlooked for whatever reason, but mm-hmm. they're following in the footsteps. They're doing the same things that that male counterpart has done who is in that senior level, but they as a woman are not getting the recognition and they're not getting the promotion and they're not getting the ability to land in a similar role as the man that is in that role.
Mm-hmm. I was just going to say, I think as much as some women and myself included could look at a male role and say, I want to do that. How did they get there? I want to emulate that. I want to know the steps they took. I will tell you from personal experience that as I became mid-career and I am just now starting a very long mid-career career, when I found and started seeing women who had gotten to where some of those male counterparts had risen to with children, with a family, it was because so much of what I was thinking was, well, if I want to get there, I can't take a mat leave. Like, right. I can't have kids. Like, I can't, you know, and that was always part of my thought process yeah. was I want to get there to have stability in my home.
Yeah.
In my finances. And personally, and as a household, I can't take time off.
Yeah.
You know, and like, I have never seen anyone go through that time off and come back stronger or come back even where they left.
Yep.
So without judgment yeah. of oh, well, you have a kid at home now, you can't do this or you can't do that.
Right.
So we won't give this to you because you have other responsibilities or something like that. Right. But when I started meeting women who had gotten to those places, it did open up a whole new world for me of seeing, oh my gosh, that's possible. What right. I'm always hearing from the outside and what I hear from society coming out of grad school and going into the workforce, I've always heard. I heard all the time. And this is kind of the downside of having a lot of these women in like equal pay. It's the downside of continuing to have that conversation is women that are coming out of school or not going to school and coming into the workforce that maybe don't know that.
Yeah.
Now know that. And so that's what happened to me is I was like, oh, well, if I guess, because this is what people are fighting for, but it doesn't look like anything's going to be changing anytime soon. They're saying that if I have a kid, I'm not going to get considered for a promotion. If I have a family, I'm not going to get a raise. If I have a family, mm-hmm. I am not going to get sufficient time off. And if I take that sufficient time off, I'm going to have professional backlash. That's what society is telling me.
Yeah.
So maybe I shouldn't have a family because I don't want to be knocked back for in an area that I've worked so hard to get to.
Yes.
Maybe that's something that I shouldn't do because it looks like, you know, it won't be beneficial for me to do so.
Right. I remember when I was at Microsoft, there was one person there who, she is an absolute rock star. And I learned that she has two children and she has a very strict rule of, I will leave the office, when we were in offices, I will leave the office by 4 o'clock every day because I intend to spend time with my family. Mm-hmm. And I remember the sense of, oh my gosh, someone did it, right? A woman did it. She is thriving in her role. She is making it work. And she has boundaries set up where she spends time with her family. Like she makes, there is no, I'm going to, if it's an emergency or if it's a this or if it's a that, it's, I will be there for my family. And then there was another female executive there at Microsoft who I had heard was like, I know that my role requires travel, but my requirement is that I am home for my children's birthdays and for big events in their lives. Mm-hmm. I will absolutely say no to travel that interferes with that. Mm-hmm. And she's an executive and she is in that role, right? And so suddenly it was that, oh, that difference between hearing you have to give up one in order for you to do the other, that suddenly I'm like, I guess it is possible to have a family. And I guess it is possible not just to have a family and still continue growing as a woman in your career, but to have a family, to have boundaries, to put your family as a priority in your life and still continue to excel in your career. I think that was the thing that for me, I had grown up being with the impression that once you have a family, basically you have stagnated your career. It's going to be way harder for you to get anywhere. It's going to be way harder for you to get recognized. You are going to be seen as, well, you have other priorities and therefore you will never put work first. And unless mm-hmm. you put work first, forget it. You're never going to make senior anything. Yeah. So to see these women at Microsoft, at a tech company, no less, one in the marketing space, the other in the tech, very solidly in the tech space, and see these two women who had achieved that. They had their children and they are able to make their families a priority and still have these growing illustrious careers was very much a, okay, I guess I can do this. I guess this is possible. But I think there's a lot to be said for an environment and a support system in place, not just at home, but also in the workplace with their managers to support that.
I think that's the key, right? Is depending on what you want, what you're looking for, it's the detriment to us that we have to go and find a company that will help us with that.
Yes.
Like the culture at Microsoft has changed so much so that, and well, it has changed so much and has resulted in a space that will help nurture those boundaries.
Yes.
It didn't used to be that way. And there are so many companies that don't operate that way. There are industries that don't operate that way. There are environments that don't operate that way. And it is just too bad that now women have to say like, well, I guess if I do want a family and I do want to excel, I can't just assume that my company will appreciate that or nurture that or support that. I have to go and like have a goal of going to a company that maybe that goal is not for pay. You might have to take less pay so you can just maintain your status or hope for a promotion, you know, and it's just too bad that we're in that spot. And I think the two of us are lucky to have experience in companies that do help nurture that. But I know that both of us have been at companies that absolutely do not.
Right. Absolutely. And I will say one of the things that I have found with the company that I'm with now, with Zappi, that was a huge factor in moving to Zappi, was not just that I was finding that the company seemed to really value the bringing your whole person to work. And by that, it was, we acknowledge you have families, you have lives outside of work. Even if you don't have children, you still don't make work your entire life. Like, we want you to be able to go enjoy a hobby, go enjoy spending time with your friends, go enjoy happy hours, right? And I will say, though, that even within, especially large companies, the company as a whole may feel like it supports that, but then you find these pockets and you find particular managers who don't, who have a completely different set of values that don't line up with the overall company values. And so I think for women, it becomes extra difficult to find not just a company where the culture is, and I would argue that it's only been recently that companies, at least here in the United States, have been more progressive in their ways of supporting women who want to have families. But also, it's like, okay, you narrow it down, right? Here's my short list of companies I would be willing to work for if I want to have children in my life. Yeah. Now let me narrow it down to the departments within that company. Now let me narrow it down to the groups within that company. And when you interview, it's like, how do you ask questions about work-life balance? How do you ask questions about people's
ability? Fear of saying, oh, she already wants to leave work early.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Or I remember being 5 months pregnant looking for a job and having to go in and say, oh, and by the way, I'm going to need maternity leave in 4 months. What's your mat leave policy? And
why to say that?
Because I felt like the jobs that I was applying for were consulting jobs, were like project-based consulting jobs. And so I felt like I had to bring that to put it on the table, because it was, you can't necessarily give me a 6 month job because I'm going to need to take the last 2 months off. I just felt like I had to lay my cards out. And sadly, each time that I did, I would see the recruiter, I would not hear from the recruiter, or I would see it in their faces, just like, oh, talk to us after your kid is born and when you can actually focus on work. And this was 10 years ago.
Still illegal. I'm just going to put it out there. That's still illegal.
Totally. Totally. But I just felt like, I don't know, again, it was that feeling of, oh, but you, company, need to be aware that you're investing in me part time. I don't know. It was this like, you're investing in me for a short amount of time and then I have to leave. I'll come back, but I just need to let you know that I'm going to have to take some kind of hiatus from this. Mm-hmm. It was a really difficult situation for me. It was a really difficult situation for me to be in.
It sounds really hard. It sounds really difficult. And I don't know what I would, I mean, that's why, I mean, I think we are still not sure what's going to happen for our personal lives. But that's a main reason why it's taken us so long to actually like logically have a discussion of starting a family or having like actually being able to have an opinion, because we haven't had the option before. I haven't had a mat leave. I haven't had adequate pay. I haven't had, you know, to feel comfortable bringing another living being into a world that would rely on me when it was hard. It was hard to feel like that would be fair to our family. So, yeah, I mean,
I think in the market research world, there can be times where it feels more complicated just because of, and I remember hearing about one colleague I know who tried to figure out, okay, this is the optimum time for me to go on mat leave because my tracker isn't going to be in field or I'm not going to have sick.
Oh, no.
Therefore, if I work 9 months back from that, okay, so I want to get pregnant around this time. And I remember thinking, how stressful is that? But at the same time, client side or supplier side, it's so project driven and it's so day to day, what are the demands for today? And I think that might be one reason why I'm so passionate about getting out of that and becoming more strategic as an industry. But just the idea of, I have this thing that I'm responsible for at work, I don't feel comfortable just letting life take its course. I feel like I have to plan everything around my work, right?
And I mean, even to bring it back to workplace, maybe even competition, and whether that's gender driven or just workplace competition, you don't want to go on a mat leave and leave your tracker and responsibilities to someone else who could potentially do it better than you, or just do it different than you. And now you have mat leaved yourself out of a job.
See, and that is a real concern. Mm-hmm. That's a real valid concern. And I think companies that have started to do the parental leave, so it's not just maternal leave, it's parental leave, right? And so you have now an increase in men who are taking time off.
Yeah.
And depending on the company, you know, it's going to be varying amounts of time that they're taking. But for me, the key is they're not at work every day. They are taking time away, and it's a significant amount of time that they are spending away from their jobs. And I feel like that starts to level that playing field, because one of the things that I had heard was, well, sure, women are being paid less than men, but that's because they're going on mat leave, they're having to leave early from work to take care of their children, they're having to take care of sick children. Mm-hmm. And so having things in place where it's like parental leave, it equals the playing field. So now it's not just on the mom to go and take care of this, but the mom's partner also mm-hmm. can share in that responsibility, can share in taking that time off.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't hear of men who are getting concerned that if they leave for 3 months, at least I haven't, I don't know if it is a concern for them, but oh, if I leave for 3 months, then suddenly I'm going to come back and my project might be out of my hands and I don't know what I'm going to do when I get back. Right. Mm-hmm. It's an interesting shift, I think, that some companies are making, where now men are able to start shouldering some of that same, not even responsibility, but that same fear.
Expectation.
Thank you. The expectation of you're going to be away for a while, and then you're mm-hmm. going to come back and you're going to try to pick things back up.
So, okay, follow-up question for you on that is, do you think that the men that, I mean, you said you haven't heard from men, and this might not be the case, as you said, it's just we haven't heard about it. Parental leave is new, it's up and coming, which is incredible for husbands. It's incredible or partners that get to take time away from their jobs. It's absolutely incredible.
Yep.
Do you think that it's interesting that when women go on mat leave, they are worried that their projects will get taken away, and men go on mat or their paternity leave and think, well, I mean, my project might get taken away, but like I'll have work to do. Like I'm not going to paternal leave my way out of a job.
Right. Right.
Isn't that interesting?
Right.
Because I think it goes back to what I was saying of like society tells us that mat leave is vulnerable. Mat leave makes you a vulnerable option for work.
Yep.
For employment.
Yep.
But men have never had that ingrained in them.
Yes.
What they have had ingrained in them though is, I can't go spend time with my kids.
Yep.
Like, their societal voice is, I can't leave work early to go and see a ballet recital.
Yeah.
Like that's just not, like, don't even ask me to.
Right.
And there are some, and this is a very generalized statement, and it can be wrong. It is wrong in so many cases, but it would be really interesting, and I've read a lot of articles about men who struggle with not having parental leave, not feeling like they have time to be there for their family. So I would love to have that conversation too. And maybe we can have a guest that will help us with that.
We should. And I can tell you, one colleague that I have in particular has been effusive about what a wonderful time it's been for having to work from home and not being on the road all the time, because he feels like finally he can spend time with his family and he mm-hmm. can be there to support his wife and take some of the load off of the childcare, right? Mm-hmm. And I would guess he is not alone at all in that regard. I know others who I have talked to when I have had to be on travel, and they're like, oh, and these are men who are like, I hate being away from my family. I hate taking that time away. I hate leaving my wife to deal with the kids all by herself. And I think there is a lot more expectation from dads to be involved in their children's lives. I think that didn't used to be the case. I know growing up, I don't think that was the case for I don't think anyone in my dad's generation was necessarily expected to spend time with their children, right? They were expected to be dad. You go to work, you come home, and then you just do your stuff.
But yeah, I also, your dad on the weekends.
Exactly. But I also think there is a shift too, because of now you have just partners, and your partner might be the same gender. Your partner might be a different gender. But I think that has also started to shift the way that we look at parenting in general, and in the way that we react to support causes for parental leave, for more balance for parents.
Sick leave, allowing, you know, mandated sick leave so parents can take care of their kids. Yeah. And obviously to say, so you feel like you can also take sick leave without facing backlash of taking a sick leave.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. Or having to take sick leave on behalf of your children. And so they end up taking up all of your sick leave. And now you don't have sick leave for yourself because of the lack of flexibility that your job might give you to work from home. Mm-hmm. There is just so much that is changing that it are very positive changes, but I still, you know, it's like there is still a battle to be fought. There is still so much in the research industry, market research industry and insights, that we still have a ways to go. We still need equal representation in the workplace, in senior leadership positions. Even speaking at conferences, we need to be sure that we have equal representation. And I couldn't help but wonder if part of the perception that senior leadership tends to be male dominated, which there is data to back that up, that it is still in the market research industry, is still male dominated. But it doesn't help that you have panels at conferences of senior leaders and they're all men.
Yeah.
Or you look at the speaker lineup and you start to see it's majority men and very few women.
And you know, though, that a lot of conferences defend that of like, well, men applied.
Yep.
That's who applied.
Yep.
What is stopping conference people who are in charge of setting speaker lineups, what's stopping them from going out to LinkedIn or stopping them from reaching out to women, past women colleagues or female colleagues, or reaching out to these male colleagues that they have and saying, hey, do you have any women that might be able to help shed a diversified view on this? Yep. And while we're on it, do you have any friends that might be from the Latina community, from the, you know, from the Black community, anyone else can just help us get a handle? And so we're not providing one single point of view.
Yes.
Just because you only have three abstracts that were submitted to you and they were all men, and let's be honest, they were all white men that mm-hmm. submitted your abstracts.
Mm-hmm.
Like that, it's not against the rules to ask someone to come and be a voice on your panel.
Yes.
It's not against the rules.
Yes. It's not against the rules to go and solicit talks and abstracts from women. And I will say, I'm going to put this out there because I think the women in research community has been extremely valuable in helping connect women together and helping provide a voice and provide support and mentorship for women who are trying to get into more senior roles. I also know that Wire and Annie Pettit is another example, are very committed to, if you are a woman who wants to speak at a conference, if you've even had someone reach out to you and say, I think you should speak at this, to provide help in writing your abstract, to provide help in getting things set up and polishing your talk and giving you an opportunity to have that talk. I think one of the things that I love that Annie Pettit has done and that Green Book has supported is at IIEX, at a couple of those conferences, she runs a new speaker thing, and it is, the entire environment is set up so that it's 100% supportive. It's, please, if you're going to come and watch, you are here to support these people who are brand new speakers. This is their first experience speaking at a conference. But she also, you know, seeks volunteers and also helps people who submit to that track. And she will go solicit that, and she will spread the word far and wide to help them write their talks, to help them narrow down to a topic that they can speak on. And so for our listeners, if you know women who should take the stage, but maybe are hesitant because they don't know how to write an abstract or they're not sure what they should talk about, I think reach out to a member of the Wire community, reach out to Annie Pettit, reach out to either of us. I think it's super helpful as a woman to know that you have a huge support behind you to get into a speaker role at a conference.
And I think another point of that is, if you don't think you have something to say, you have something to say.
Yes.
On the conference topic and first time conference, I had someone, a mentor of mine, an old former colleague of mine, who was running a conference at the beginning of this year. And she asked me, I need someone and you can do it. Will you come and speak at my conference? And I was like, oh, I have nothing. I don't know. I'm okay.
Right.
You'll find someone that is in my head better than me, more qualified than me. Like, no, I don't think so. And it's the one thing from this year that, like, I have such this professional and personal philosophy of just say yes, ask anyways, let them say no to you. You don't say no to them. Like, when it's realistic, like, what's the harm in asking and having a conversation? Yeah. Go and do what you gotta do. Are you kidding? You've also been asking me to co-host on this podcast for like 2 years. And I'm like, I don't think so. And I just, it's my number one, like, regret from 2020 is not just saying yes, especially now that we're never going to see anyone ever again. it would have been a really fun trip to Vegas, but before lockdown. But, you know, I think it just goes to show you, like, yes, so much of what we listen to, so much of what we as market researchers are exposed to are male-driven and white male-driven. And it's okay for us to say yes. And it's also okay for us to remember that in order for any of these people that we are familiar with to have gotten to where they are, they also at some point made fools of themselves. It's okay. Yeah. It's not just an us situation where we're like, but what if we don't do well? What if I become a co-host of a podcast and I just say like and all the time? Well, guess what? I say like and all the time. And it's probably really frustrating for most people that listen to this. But it's fine. I said yes, and here I am, and I'll get better. If someone could just send me the number of times I say like in an episode, my only goal will be to decrease it by one biweekly. Like, that's my only goal. I'm not going to commit to anything. But I just hope that I do see changes, and I'm not sure if it's from my privileged perch, client side in a company that I feel very secure in, at least for the moment.
Yep.
That I can say that, but I feel like things are improving. I'm happy to continue to have this conversation, as I'm sure people outside of you and I will have opinions on this, because there are situations and moments where this is not the case, and yep. people do not feel secure, and people do not feel safe, and they continue to feel marginalized and taken advantage of. And I think those stories need to be out there.
Yeah.
And I just really hope that things continue on the path of using my example of seeing, you know, in the beginning of my career, men and me saying, I want to get there. What did they do? I want to take the steps to be able to get to where they are.
Yeah.
And you saying, you know, there was a female colleague of mine who had two kids that set their boundaries. I'm hoping that we can just start pinpointing just people.
Yep.
And we don't have to say, oh, that's a woman who has two kids and set her boundaries. It's just, oh, that person has a really banging career.
Yeah.
And she or he is a trailblazer, and they're, you know, they are a trailblazer. They can do this. They've done this.
Yeah.
And they have a family.
Yeah.
And I hope that we continue to excel to the point that we will always need mentors. We will always need mentors that we connect with. But yeah. I hope that we continue to get to grow to the point that we don't have to feel like we need to segment ourselves.
Yes. Amen. Amen.
Yeah.
Couldn't have said that better. And I think we'll end on that note. Thanks, cool. Christina.
Awesome. Thanks, Z. We'll talk to you soon.
All right.
Hey everyone, thanks for listening to this latest episode of the MR Explorer podcast with Christina and I. We wanted to address something that is very much missing from this episode, and that is a discussion about the experience in the market research industry for anyone who is not a cisgender female. We realize that is very much missing, and we invite anyone who would like to participate or like to share their experience to send us an email at mrexplorerpodcast@gmail.com. We would love if you would like to be a guest on the podcast, or if you just want to share what your experience has been being non-cisgender, either female or male, in the market research industry, your experience. We would really appreciate that and would love to be able to share it with the rest of our listeners. Thanks very much, and talk again soon. Thank you.